Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Ah, he got it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards! Iowa!
56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Don't miss a thing from the world of college football. Stay right here for College Gridiron on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into our fourth week of College Gridiron here with the third week of this crew. I have Isabella Terracini to my left, Tucker Austin to my right. We are ready to talk a little bit of college football. Somehow we're a quarter of the way through the season, which just doesn't seem right. It's going by way too fast. So we'll start with you, Isabella. How are you doing on this fine Thursday afternoon?
I am doing good. Looking to the week ahead, we don't have much, but we're going to deal with what we're given. For sure.
Yep. Feeling good as well. Decent week. Pretty light. Only had one class today, so feeling pretty energized right now, not going to lie. And it's a really solid week of games. I mean, we talked about it a bit before the show. The noon slate's a little light, but that 3:30 slate really picks up, and we have good late games. Finally, we might get a really nice game in the primetime slot. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah, that 7 o'clock, 7:30 slot actually looks like it's going to produce. Hopefully at least one of those games turns out and we have something to turn the TV to, because it's been a little bit of rough primetime slots to start the season. But, you know, before we get into this week, let's throw back to last week. Anything stand out to either of you? We'll start with you, Isabella.
Not much other than Arch Manning and his arm and his legs. That was the only story that I saw.
Pretty much his whole body, I guess.
Yeah. And his name and his everything. Everything was about Arch Manning. Like, love him to death. Don't get me wrong, but can we have just something else, perhaps?
Can I just say one thing about Arch Manning? People are like, oh, he's got all the athleticism in the Manning family. I would just like to point out that Archie Manning was the original dual threat quarterback. Let's please give some respect to Saints legend Archie Manning, the forefather of that family. Just because Peyton and Eli were like snails on the football field doesn't mean there's no athleticism in that family.
Yeah, he might be the most athletic Manning, though. He might just be.
I don't know. Archie could probably still be.
It remains to be seen. But my big takeaway from week three was just that I think Tennessee is really legit. They haven't had that great competition so far, but I look to that NC State game as like a pretty decent indicator of what kind of a team the Tennessee Volunteers are this year, and they're 3-0 so far, outscoring opponents 191-13.
Is that good?
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty good. It is the most points for and least points against in college football.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Right. This is a team to be reckoned with, and they will continue to show that as time goes on.
But do not call them UT.
No.
Yeah, no, they're not UT.
The Vols. Tennessee.
UTen.
Rocky Top.
Yes, any of those.
Any of the options. UT is that team in Austin. Well, speaking of Tennessee, let's get into our quarter season Heisman top five, of which, for me personally, Tennessee's quarterback Nikolai Amaleva is definitely deserving to be up there. Also on my list, I've got Cam Ward and Jalen Milroe. I've got Ashton Jaunte, just because I want to give him a little bit of props. He's been incredible. And then rounding out my top five is Jackson Dart from Ole Mississippi.
Yeah, I agree with you on Ward, Milroe, and Dart. Those are all the same on my list as they are on yours. I don't think in order, though. My one is Shador, just because I like that performance last week. Against who did Colorado play last week?
Colorado State. I thought we agreed not to talk about them this week.
Oh, right. It wasn't the Colorado State game.
Yeah, it was.
It was?
It was.
Oh, okay. Well, regardless.
It feels like such a long time ago because all you heard about.
It's weird. But regardless, I liked his performance bouncing back after the Nebraska loss. He put up 310 yards, 4 touchdowns, 36 for 49 passing. I think if he was leaving the Heisman conversation, that game put him back into the conversation, And if he continues to play like that, he'll like continue to be a part of the Heisman discussion. But the one player I have on my list, or the other player I have on my list than Shador, that doesn't match yours, is Dylan Gabriel from Oregon. He's tied for fifth in college football in total completions, and he has the best completion percentage in college football at 84%.
Wow.
So I'd like he's completing a lot of passes and at a high percentage, and this is another one of those, or it's kind of similar to Shador, where he needs to continue to put up performances like this to stay in the conversation, but like one or two bad games could just completely tank his stock.
Yeah, he was up there, but it was just the performance of the team, kind of like with Shador. Although with Shador, it's you throw the ball 50 times a game, I expect you to put up those stats, and which might be a little bit unfair to him because, I mean, that's what he has to do to win. And for the most part, he looks like he's contributing to a winning football team this year, unlike last year. With Dylan Gabriel, it's just the team had such high expectations coming into the season, and it's just been a pretty rocky start that I just can't have him in there right now. He has played very well.
They took care of business against Oregon State.
They did.
And I thought that game was going to be closer. And it looked close at the start, but eventually Oregon pulled away. So, like, they might be better going forward.
Yeah. I'll be getting back into it. My top five, well, it starts with Ward, and then it goes to Dart, and then Milroe, and then Donovan Edwards, and then hopefully we see him again, Quinn Ewers.
Mm.
Need to see him again.
Can he... You think he can stay in the Heisman discussion, missing like two or three games?
That's not up to me.
I think it's an interesting one where UT, if they stay the number one team in the country, which I think they'll struggle to do.
Gonna struggle in the top five, but maybe as number one, yes.
It's gonna be a Quinn Ewers.
If Ewers
he's
can come
have
back,
a lot of work to do.
If he can come back before the Oklahoma game on October 12th. That'll be huge because, honestly, Louisiana Monroe and Mississippi State is awful. They might be worse than Florida this year, which is insane.
Texas got an easy schedule to start off their season, which is probably why they're number one right now.
It's also probably why they're giving Quinn Ewers the time that he needs to make sure that he's healthy. You don't need him in the game against Louisiana Monroe or Mississippi State.
And starting, you know, a Manning, it might all just be for PR.
I think it's just because, like, obviously he is the backup. He is a talented quarterback. I think it helps a lot that his last name is Manning.
Manning. Yeah. He really did put that school on the map.
Wow. That's, wow.
But hot takes out here. UT, watch out.
Yeah.
I would agree, though. So I do want to talk about my one little bit of wild card that I threw into my Heisman in Ashton Jaunte, and the fact that the guy has almost 500 rushing yards through two games, and I think he goes to Boise State, so it's not going to get talked about as enough, but that is an insane stat line, and if you're purely talking off best players in college football, I think there's no way you can say he's not a top three player in college football. It's just his team is maybe what's going to let him down in this Heisman race, but if the guy can keep putting up 200 yards a game, I think it's going to be very hard to say you're not a Heisman, at least contender, at least going to see it at the ceremony in New York. If he keeps this up, I mean, it's going to be hard to keep him away from New York.
I mean, that's pretty much a lot of these guys. I mean, we are only a quarter of the way through the season. You could easily call this a way too early Heisman top five,
just like
we did like 2 weeks ago.
Which is why I threw Nico in there too, because we're a quarter of the way of the season. You can't tell me what to do. I'll do what I want.
Yeah, but I mean, based on the quarter of the season that Tennessee has played, they look like the national champions.
Yeah, Nico's stats maybe don't stand out as much. You know, 700 yards passing, 600 or 6 touchdowns, but
they get a lot done on offense, though. They run a nice mix.
Yeah, it looks real pretty. They're blowing teams out, so he doesn't need to throw the ball that much. And you know,
yeah, he wasn't even in the game that long.
Plus,
last week.
When he's on the field, he looks like the best player in college football. He's a pretty watch.
It'll be fun to watch the rest of like Tennessee's season to see if it keeps up.
Yeah,
because I've always been kind of partial to Rocky Top.
Yeah,
I have no idea why, but maybe it's the big T logo.
Maybe it's the maybe, orange.
Maybe
I'm
the
just,
orange
you just said?
Probably remind it. Just it's familiar to you.
No,
that's a crazy thing to say.
I I think it's got to be that big T, the big T logo. I must just be like self-centered in like the back of my head somewhere and just like looking at a massive T.
A big orange T.
Like a big initial.
A big orange Tucker.
Yeah.
Anyways, continuing to, we'll go from our top five in the Heisman to our top five teams in the country. Who wants to start us off with your number one team? Isabella?
Okay. Texas.
You got Texas number one. Tucker.
Also Texas.
You have Texas. I have Georgia. I'll give you my reasoning for that. I was going to wait until I got to where we have Texas, but or where I have Texas. But for me, Georgia, rough game last week. So I can see dropping them. The only issue is I think they're the most talented team in the country. Just like I thought they were the most talented team in the country last year, and they didn't even make the playoff, and I think they should have. But I think they're the most talented team in the country. I think they have the best quarterback in the country in Carson Beck, and I think that they have the best coach in the country in Kirby Smart with one of the best defenses in the country. And I think all of that put together, sure, they may have struggled one game. I think next week against Alabama is going to be it's going to tell us who the actual best team in the country is, and I think the winner of that game will be ranked number one no matter what, even if Bama goes into that game ranked, I think they're four right now. If they win, I think they're number one, especially because we'll get into it when I get there, but I just don't think Texas is. They might be the number one team in the country. I don't think what they've put out on the field against the teams they've put it out against is good enough to justify the number one ranking in the country.
That's fair.
I mean, for Texas, I just have them at one because I think it would be unfair to move them down with Arch Manning having shown that he can, in fact, play football. And
yeah, but the thing
pretty
is,
decently.
The thing
so,
is, they weren't number one until this week. Arch Manning comes and they play, and they're the number one team in the country now.
Well, they were getting ready to do that anyway. If Quinn Ewers doesn't go down and Texas still wins that game, which they were going to regardless, they probably go one just because Georgia played a one-point game against Kentucky on the road.
Ohio State didn't even play last week, which is another one. Ohio State is, as we're talking about them, my number two team.
My two is Georgia.
It's Georgia, you dropped
mine's
one.
Mine's Georgia.
Also okay. Georgia, okay.
So, I mean, that's pretty much the same. I just had Georgia one, so then...
Yeah.
Ohio State was my natural follow-up to that. I think it's hard to justify they didn't play last week, so moving them too much wouldn't have been bad for both of y'all. I'm assuming it's just because either you think Texas is better or just because Texas or just because Georgia played that close game. Maybe a combination of both. There's not too much.
Like Kentucky's
there.
Just not that great, you know.
Yeah, and
like, and they haven't been
points.
Playing good games this season, but like. I mean, if you look back in history, the last two times before this game that Georgia played in Kentucky, they didn't score more than 16 points.
Georgia,
so it was almost inevitable that they weren't going to score that much, but the defense still held up.
They do struggle with Kentucky. They also always have one game where they just look terrible, and I don't know what it is.
Hopefully it's not that Texas game this year because they could really screw up their season if they drop a game to Texas.
And the issue is with Georgia...
Or it's not that Bama game.
Their weapons.
Yeah, that too.
Georgia has a rough schedule at points. And the issue with Georgia is that their offensive playmakers are very young, one, and very unproven without a lot of experience. Like, they lose Ladd McConkey, they lose Brock Bowers, and they replace him with a guy in Dylan Bell who is a redshirt sophomore, I believe. Maybe he might be a true junior. I don't know if he got the redshirt status. He just hasn't played that much. And if you ask everyone around the program, he is, you know, potential to be one of the best receivers in the country. He just needs more experience. And that's why I think it's hard to judge a team that has a lot of young weapons that's only played three games together, where I think the team that played in Kentucky last week versus the team we're going to see against Texas in a couple weeks are going to be completely different. And that's why I think you can justify them being number one or number two, depending on where you see Texas.
And also, rankings change week by week.
Exactly.
Yeah, and one inexplicable loss can just turn the entire thing on its head. Like, I'm surprised Notre Dame didn't get as crippled by the Northern Illinois loss that, like they're still gonna like they're already climbing their way back. I mean, they put up 66 points against Purdue last week.
Another MAC team this week. Uh-oh.
They all set the alarm bells off. Like, Notre Dame might lose again.
Three is where I have Texas. I just don't think they've done enough to move from where they were. So that's my only justification for three being Texas. You can move them up. You can move them down. Whatever. I think three is a good spot for them. Tucker and Isabella, who do you have at three?
I have Ole Miss.
You have Ole Miss. I like that, actually.
I love that. Yeah. Oh, my God. I would love to put Ole Miss at three. I really would. Mine's Bama.
Bama? Okay, okay. So we'll start with you, Isabella. Why is Ole Miss three? Give us your justification.
Because I just see them going at it this week, next week, and for the rest of the season. I don't know. I have faith in them. I think Jackson Dart can definitely kind of fit foe it with his team and kind of – I mean, the defense is great, the offense is great, and it's just, it's an SEC team, and they're gonna see what they can do in the coming weeks.
Can I say something that might be a little bit out of pocket and weird?
Ooh, okay, here we go.
Jackson Dart is a really good looking young man. That guy's hair is awesome.
When was the last time you didn't say something about how hot a quarterback is?
Okay, I think...
Every single week, you know, somebody different.
You might question this. I think a big part of how good a quarterback is, just look at Jalen Hurts. How much swagger, how attractive are they? Jalen Hurts, 95% of the reason is he's good is because he's very attractive. It's not because he's good at football. I'll tell you that much right now.
I love Jackson Dart. He's two on my Heisman list from before.
83% completion.
Yeah, that's the second best over
1,000,
in the country.
Over 1,000 yards already. Eight touchdowns to one pick.
The stats are absolutely there. It's just like it's another one of those guys where it's going to be if Ole Miss and if he himself can continue to play well in an SEC schedule. Mm-hmm. Like, and Ole Miss's schedule isn't ridiculous, but they're not like they're not Bama, they're not Georgia, they're not a team that could roll through an SEC schedule if the big teams aren't on it. They could easily slip up on the road to any of their SEC opponents. Yeah. But Alabama is three. For me, and it kind of has to do with my four pick, too. It's because I don't believe in Ohio State being three. I took the AP's ranking. I flipped Alabama and Ohio State, mainly because, or partially because of strength of schedule, because Bama's schedule is obviously tougher than Ohio State's. They're, like, the conferences are just not the same.
Yep.
And partially because... I was really surprised. I thought it would take way longer for DeBoer to really like get a handle on the program and get everybody to buy in and get the gears to start turning. But this Bama team got going way faster than that. And I really am impressed by what DeBoer's Alabama has been able to put on the field. And I like their schedule is going to be tough. But I think they've got a decent shot at Georgia at home next week.
Yeah, and I mean, so Alabama is who I have it for, and it's purely because I just couldn't put them above the three teams I had. I like them a lot. Kalen DeBoer, what he has done, I mean, Saban's gone, but they look just as good as they've looked in a while, I would say. Kalen DeBoer is easily a top five coach in the country for me. What he did at Washington, and then what he's doing now, he's in what could have been a disaster year for Alabama.
Could have been a rebuild year.
Exactly.
Everyone was preparing for it to be a rebuild year for Alabama.
People would not have been shocked if this is a team that went 9-3, and I guess it still could be. But when you have a guy like Jalen Milroe, you have to compete with him, right? You have to make the team. He is too good of a quarterback, too good of a college quarterback to not be competitive. So the fact that DeBoer has found a way in what some might say is a less talented Alabama team than has been, you know, maybe in three, four years ago, he's able to win games, and the team is very well coached, and surprisingly, it doesn't look like they've lost a step off of Nick Saban.
And we mentioned that USF game before the show. Mm-hmm. That was like that's one of the games that you can look at and find a team's character in that game. Like USF was giving them a fight,
16-12
at home
going into the fourth.
And they were real, like, Alabama was not necessarily on the ropes, but, like,
I would say
They were sweating for sure. I know Nick Saban was sitting up in that press box. They dedicated the field to Saban that night, and he was sitting up. I know he was, like, throwing someone gave him a clipboard to throw across the suite.
If you lost if you lost on Saban night, I think Saban might come out of retirement, fire Kalen DeBoer himself.
Oh, yeah.
No, but Bama absolutely showed up in that fourth quarter, handled business at home against USF, and, like, that's... That's the kind of team that will continue to win games through the rest of the season, regardless of the situation that you put them in. They could go down 14 in the first quarter, and you can't write off Alabama, which is insane to say in the year after Saban leaves, like with all the question marks in the air, like what you've been saying with DeBoer. But it turns out it's like Alabama never left. Mm-hmm.
So I had Bama 4. You have Ohio State 4 is what you said?
Yep.
I also had Bama 4.
You also have Bama 4. Okay. Love that. So we'll move on to 5 then here. And there were 3 teams I thought I could have put at 5. Ole Miss was one. UMiami was the other. But ultimately I went with Tennessee as my 5. And you can make an argument on who they've played, whatnot, the competition. As you mentioned, the best offense in the country and the best defense in the country in terms of points per game. And what they've put on the field has been so impressive that, again, it's early in the season, so I can kind of do whatever I want. You can't talk to me about it. I'm going to throw Tennessee in there because I think what they've done has been so impressive, and I just want to give them their flowers for it.
Yeah, I have Ohio State for like the same reason that y'all were talking about it. I think this is a team that does have an insane amount of potential. I mean, they've been putting up over 50 points in their past 2 games. And maybe they've been easy wins. I don't know. That's not up to me to decide. But, I mean, looking to the future, they have. I mean, they start playing in the Big Ten pretty soon. So, I mean, we'll really see what they're up to. And like I said, it changes week to week. But as of right now, they're my 5.
And teams like Ohio State definitely are supposed to win those games by insane scorelines or put up 50-plus points. So they're definitely doing what they're supposed to do. And even if it's a bad win, I guess, or a win against a worse team, it still looks good if the offense was firing and the defense was locked down, which is exactly the case. But my 5 is Tennessee.
Yep.
So
okay.
Don't have anything else to explain about that. Other than that, and we'll get into it at the end of the week 4 preview, but I think they're going to burst onto the scene against Oklahoma this week.
I think that's going to be a really good game. It's going to be good. I do just want to say one more thing on Ohio State, and that I think it's been said the last couple of years, but it really is Ryan Day needs to prove that he is a top coach, especially when you have 2 of the top 3 running backs in the country. In you have to
enough
be
with
better.
The trick plays, Ryan.
Run the ball.
Run the ball.
Run the dang ball, coach. Run the dang ball. On that note, we will not talk about Ohio State this week, actually, because they have...
Because they're playing Marshall.
Exactly. You know, and...
Other Big Ten teams,
no
though.
No disrespect to Marshall. Nobody wants to see that. So, to start our week 4 previews, we will start with a Friday-ranked game, a little Big Ten action, number 24, Illinois, at number 22, Nebraska, Friday night at 7:30. What stands out to you, Tucker?
Mini Mahomes.
And
I think he would stand out to pretty much anybody unless he was like in the same stadium as Patrick Mahomes. Then you really wouldn't know the difference between the two of them. Because and we were talking jokingly about this 2 weeks ago, the last time we were all on the show together, that the Mini Mahomes stuff, like play it up for media and whatever. But no, it's real. It's very real. The body type is almost identical. He runs like him. He kind of throws like him. Obviously, the hair is there. But all the pregame rituals and stuff are there, too.
It's a little weird.
It's a little weird, but Patrick Mahomes is his idol. I used to get in the batter's box when I was playing wiffle ball, and I would do the stance of every Yankee player. So imitating your idols on the field.
I used to dunk like LeBron too. Yeah. In the backyard. I mean,
on the little tykes hoop.
No, 3-foot hoop. I would actually set it to 12 feet to challenge myself a little bit.
And you'd get a step ladder. Or you'd climb on the back.
I may have lost a step, but I had hops back when I was 6 years old. Don't worry, I was like Yao Ming.
Regardless, I think Mini Mahomes is going to be the difference maker in this game. He played a great game against Colorado. I mean, a really, really great game. And against a team like that with all of the media stuff surrounding it to get that kind of a win, it put Nebraska back in the rankings. This week they have a chance to go up in the rankings, and I think it's going to be up to Mini Mahomes to carve up that Illinois defense. Nebraska's defense is just a little soft against the pass.
Yeah.
But I think if they can just contain Illinois in terms of the run game, this game will turn out to be a bit of a thriller.
I mean, Nebraska's given up 6.7 points a game. They're a little soft on the pass, but I think some of that is just the fact that they played Shedeur Sanders and CU, and he threw the ball like 50 times that game. And so he's a great quarterback, and he threw the ball 50 times, so you're going to give up some yardage there, but they're still giving up less than a touchdown a game. They're scoring 34 points a game. This could be an... I'm so happy that the Big Ten is more than just the Big Three right now. And that, I mean, you have so many teams that are so competitive and so good in that Big Ten. I think they have 6 ranked teams.
How about it?
Yeah, it might be 5.
That checks out, though. It's a Power 5 conference. Like, it's a great conference to be a part of.
Yeah, but, like, notably not really, like, not really sniffing the top 10, though.
No. I mean, both of this is 24.
Other than Ohio
22.
State.
Ohio State, USC is 11.
Right, okay, so USC is getting there.
I think Penn State is 14.
Okay.
No.
That's a little high.
Utah's 14. Penn State's 16, I think.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Then you have Nebraska, you have Illinois.
And they load out like the...
Washington's an okay team. Yeah.
That was a...
No, we're not going to talk about it.
No, yeah, we would get way
Washington, man, they're hurting me. They're hurting my soul. They were one of my sleeper picks for the Big Ten.
Aww.
They're hurting my soul. But I think Luke Altmyer is getting slept on a little bit. I think he's also a pretty good quarterback. I'm not going to say a very good quarterback, but I think he's pretty good. Dylan Raiola's got potential to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country in a couple years. This is going to be a very good Friday night game, which, I mean, we've gotten some decent Friday night games this year, and I think this is going to keep that rolling.
That's a great way to start off the weekend into the next slate to come in the next day, because it's like, you know, it gets good, and then it goes kind of down, and then it gets good again in terms of games.
I'm cool with Friday college football.
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Why
too.
Not? I mean, they're like... Especially early in the season, like right now, there's nothing really else going on Fridays in sports. Like the NFL doesn't play on Friday. They did the first week, but
they're playing
really
tonight,
thing.
Though.
They're not allowed to, actually, legally. Or I don't know if it's legal, but it's a American Broadcasting Association.
Like a conflict, I guess, or something?
It's a law that, or a statute or whatever that they have in their
that they can't play the same day as the NFL?
It's like September 2nd until... December or whenever the NFL starts playing on Saturdays.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the reason they don't play on Saturdays is because it's like written into the broadcasting whatever bylaws.
That college gets Saturday.
That college gets Fridays and Saturdays.
Oh, okay.
So that's why you saw that Friday game and then on September 1st.
Oh,
because
it was
September
right
2nd,
before it kicked in.
Yep, it's right before it kicked in.
Oh, that is interesting.
And then towards the end of this NFL season, you get those Saturday games.
Yeah.
Because it's whatever the broadcaster's agreement or whatever it is that college football gets Friday and Saturday to themselves. The NFL gets Sunday and Monday to itself. And that's why you have NFL and college football games on Thursdays, is because there's nothing about Thursdays, which was actually something I learned a couple weeks ago when that game was being played on Friday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was something I thought was
cool. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You learn something new every time you step into
the
studio.
Wow. We're an educational podcast now. How about that?
That's what you think. When you tune in, you're like, I'm going to learn something. I'm not just going to hear 3 people talk about who knows what, very little football, and good-looking quarterbacks. No, I'm going to learn something. Talking about maybe a less good-looking quarterback matchup, not talking about their looks, talking about their on-field play, NC State at number 21, Clemson. Your noon Saturday, lone Saturday noon game that anyone wants to talk about. Cade Klubnik and Grayson McCall. 2 quarterbacks who formerly very hyped up. Grayson McCall not coming in, obviously played at Coastal. Was very hyped up at Coastal. He's whatever. Klubnik, 5-star quarterback, was supposed to be the successor to Trevor Lawrence. Or I guess successor to DJU, actually. He struggled a little bit. He looked a lot better in their last game against App State, but it's App State, so who knows? Can he finally put it together? It's going to be an interesting game. Both teams have had big losses to SEC schools. It's a little bit of a weaker ACC, so outside of Miami, who's that other team? Is it Clemson? NC State has some talent around them, so maybe it could be them. You know, Kevin Concepcion is one of the best receivers in the country. It'll be an interesting game. I don't know if it'll be a good game.
That's true. I see that. I like this QB matchup, but I do think that this is like the underdog of the week sort of thing. But it's not like a huge underdog story. But I mean, I'm looking for a story here. So I think that if NC State beats Clemson, it's gonna be all over like ESPN.
Oh, for sure. It's, like they love when like anytime an unranked team beats a ranked team, that's like the most basic upset. It's not like a betting upset. It's just like a straight up rankings upset.
It could be like a team that's receiving votes versus the number 25 team in the country. And like, oh my goodness, ranked upset. And it's like, these are the same team.
Exactly.
These teams have no difference between them. But yeah, let's go off.
Yeah, and I thought that Clemson played better in week two against App State. I mean, it's kind of hard to not play better than they did against Georgia. But the defense did still give up 363 yards of total offense to App State. So for that reason, I'm a little concerned about Clemson.
I think one of the issues with that is looking at yardage in a blowout like that is
when did they kind of stop?
Yeah, you're getting a lot of guys in. Also, when you're scoring that many points, your opponent is also getting a lot of possessions because it was a lot of quick points in there, a lot of big chunk plays. And so when you have a lot of plays, for the most part, you're going to get yards. So their yards per play was a little bit better than that 330 yards they gave up, as well as I think a lot of that was in the fourth quarter.
It probably was. But like I agree with that point, but this is App State is one of those teams like a Marshall or any of the teams that Ohio State blitzed by 50, where like Clemson, if they are a team that's competing for the ACC championship, they're beating App State by like 40 points, and they're not giving up more than like maybe 300 yards of total offense, even if it's in garbage time. The other team's offense shouldn't be able to properly function in any capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, moving on from Clemson's defense, NC State's defense hasn't been able to stop anyone.
Yeah, I mean, 51-10 to Tennessee. How much of that is Tennessee being insane? They haven't looked good in their other games either, and it's a big question in that Cade Klubnik is going to need some of these bad defenses to play against to get the confidence up. But it'll be real telling on what Clemson has in Cade Klubnik if he can't at least look halfway decent in this game.
With NC State's defense in the state that it is in, I don't like the matchup against Clemson because they're coming off of a performance where the offense put up 700 yards plus. That is a ridiculous amount of offense. And if NC State is not able to stop Clemson's offense at all, like they haven't been able to stop offenses so far, they don't have a chance in this game, I don't think. And I'd like it for it to be close just because this would be the interesting game from the noon slate, but I could also easily see Clemson winning this game by like 30 points.
Yeah. I think this game's going to be like a 17-10, just ugly, ugly game.
I could see that.
And it's not going to be 17-10 because the defense played well. It's going to be 17-10 with like 500 yards on both sides, but the quarterbacks are going to throw like three picks each.
Oh,
it's going to be disgusting. it's not going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, I'm no longer ready for this game anymore.
I'll probably sleep through that game, to be honest. I won't even wake up for it.
Yeah, just like wake up for the 3:30 slate.
Yeah,
wake up.
Slate is not something you want to talk about or watch. Go ahead and sleep. Go get brunch or something.
Yeah, treat yourself. Do something. It's going to be better than sitting on your couch
Have a great, exciting Friday night. Don't worry about having to get up early. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your sleep. Tune in for this 3:30 slate, starting with number 11 USC at number 18 Michigan at 3:30. Before we get into more of your breakdowns of this game, I just want to know, does a USC win here end Michigan's season?
Yes.
Which is bold to say in week four, but two losses at home.
In the first four weeks. Yes.
In Sherrod Moore. Do they start looking for someone outside of house and say, hey, Sherrod was just an interim coach, even though he's not technically? Where does Michigan go if they lose this game?
I don't think Michigan knows where they go either if they lose this game. This is like a limbo scenario.
I feel like they were almost forced into hiring Sherrod Moore in that, like, he stepped in when Harbaugh was suspended. Everyone loved him. I don't know if he was the right coach for this program at this time.
You know what? I'm going to go yes. A loss to USC does end Michigan's season. And we've been talking about like Michigan's schedule down the road hanging over their head for the entire year. Like, you're not beating Ohio State.
You're not. They're not going to beat Ohio State. I mean, that'd be three losses there, and mm-hmm. 9-3 at best. I said before the show, I think they're a 7-5 team.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a loss to USC really makes.
They got
that,
Oregon too,
and they have
at
Oregon.
The Big House, which is clearly not a fortress anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you. No. Two losses at home.
They could lose to Minnesota.
Okay. Let's not
now,
go too far.
Now we're just riffing off.
I mean, also, this could be a rebirth week, though. Alex Orgie is finally getting the start, so it is no longer just the absolute horror show that was Davis Warren. Alex Orgie is a guy who has not thrown the ball much in his career. He's been kind of the gadget quarterback, but it's his time to shine. They could finally have something in him. I think he could be maybe lead to a bit of a resurgence for Michigan this year. But if he comes out and sucks, you're then stuck with going back to Davis Warren. And as he proved last week, that is not a recipe for success.
Am I reading this right? Oh. Alex Orgie has 3 completions and 2 touchdowns?
In his career? Or
like
this year?
This year, I mean.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because, I mean, he comes in.
So he's thrown 3 passes, or not thrown 3 passes, but he's completed
he's
3
like
passes, and 2 of them were in the end zone.
I think he's like 3 for 7, though. Like, the completion percentage.
It's 3 for 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's at 50%.
Yeah. Look at that off the dome. That's just me looking at box scores week to week.
This is a glaring sample size issue.
I mean, how many passes did he throw last year? 5?
Was it really that small?
Yeah, because he only ran the ball when he came in.
Oh, yeah, wow. Wait. Oh, no, that is rushing. Where is... Oh, he did not. Oh, that's receiving. Where's his passing stats?
Probably since he's a quarterback would be at
the
top.
Here we go.
Would be my guess.
He went. Why does it say 0-0? Did he throw the ball at
all? He might not have thrown a pass. He did only come in to run the ball.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
I really don't. I don't think he passed the ball a single time.
Michigan is.
I have no idea if he's prepared for USC.
Yikes! That is not happening.
Michigan is starting a running back at quarterback this week. Right. He's thrown barely any passes in his collegiate career. I think he's a junior now.
Yeah, he is.
Redshirt sophomore, maybe. But he's going to start a quarterback with, like, 10 career attempts. So,
shout out to USC for getting their first Big Ten win this weekend.
Yes,
Michigan.
Shout out. First Big Ten win in the history of USC.
And shutting Michigan down. Yeah, after this week, they could officially have fallen off.
Yeah, I think we've now settled on that.
Kind
being
of the
like,
way we're talking about Michigan right now makes me ask the question: what does the Michigan loss this week say about UT's win earlier? And can you still use the Michigan win as a justification for UT being number one despite UT not having played anyone?
Contextually, I think yes, because it was week one, so it was a lot
week
of
two.
It was a, or week two. Yeah, it was week two, but still, week two was a lot like a much different. Context for that game, Michigan was thought to be a better team. I suppose if they weren't, it doesn't
but
really matter.
That's why I don't.
But
like
it was still the it was the
all.
Big House with like full hype. Big House,
right?
Like,
it's week two. It's first home game
before the depressed Florida State syndrome came in.
Yes. But it was definitely a different environment and a different kind of game being played at Michigan than is going to be played for the rest of the year. But I do. It's interesting to think about, and it's probably going to wind up a worse win than we originally thought it was going to be.
So, off that, are we of the opinion that ranked wins are valued at what the ranking was when you played them, or what they end up at the end of the season?
I think when you played them.
When you played them.
Because a team could totally change in like 7 weeks.
Yeah, they can.
Or in 1 week.
But
like,
also,
somebody gets hurt, and then you fall.
I'm also a believer that rankings shouldn't happen until like week 4, because preseason rankings skew stuff so much.
Yeah.
Like Georgia being number one, if they had come out and lost 3 games in a row, they probably still would be like 25.
Because they started number one. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's why like Michigan was what, 5 to start the season or 7? And so it's just like they're 18 now, but if they had started at, say, 16, they'd be unranked now with the way they've played. And so I think at least for the first couple weeks of the season, rankings don't mean anything. And we're starting to get into where we've seen enough that maybe it has. But I just don't think we've seen enough from Michigan to justifying a UT number one. But if UT comes out over the next 3 weeks and takes care of business with Arch at quarterback, I'll take back my statements about them. But now we're going to move into one of the games I'm most excited for. Utah, number 12 Utah at number 14 Oklahoma State, also in that 3:30 window. I think this is going to be a very interesting game because coming into the season, I was very much Oklahoma State is Ollie Gordon or bust. And so far this season, it's actually been the opposite of that. It's been Ollie Gordon is a bust, and Alan Bowman's 37-year-old experience has carried them. I mean, he's got 8 touchdowns, like 600 yards. Alan Bowman has actually looked very good. Ollie Gordon has 34 carries for 90 yards over his last 2 games against horrible competition. He's averaging 2.8 yards per carry over his last 2 games. And this is a guy who led the country in rushing last year, albeit we did see it a little bit last year, and he had some slow starts, some bad games last year. But 2.9 yards per carry for the guy who is supposed to be your entire offense in a year in which your quarterback is just a filler quarterback, 30,000 years old. Oklahoma State
gotta
is...
Gotta love that eligibility.
I
love it.
Yeah, I guess you do. I guess you do if you're the one playing. If you're the one watching it, I don't know if you love the eligibility. Don't love 40-year-olds playing college football unless they're punters, because those are cool stories.
True.
Oklahoma State's offense is a weird one to me, and it's just...
Yeah.
They were supposed to come in, as all of Gundy's offenses are. They're going to run the football. If you can't run the football, I don't know where you go if you're Oklahoma State. Especially since you're playing a Utah defense that is giving up just over 100 yards per game rushing, right? And so it's a pretty decent rushing defense. If you're struggling to rush the ball against Tulsa, how are you going to rush the ball against a good Big 12 rush defense?
Yeah, and in my notes originally, I had that the key for Utah would be to contain Ollie Gordon. But, like...
Seems like everyone's containing Ollie Gordon.
Yeah, it seems like that. Well,
the second.
I mean, when you're the best rusher in the country, every team's game plan against Oklahoma State going into this year is going to be make sure Ollie Gordon doesn't get more than 3 yards every time he touches the ball. And if the teams that they've played so far have done that effectively, then more power to them. I think it's a credit to Oklahoma State that they were able to still win games despite not getting to do it the way that they wanted to. But this might be where the buck stops.
This is a game you
have
to be able to
run Oklahoma State. Like, you need to have a mixed offense. Like, this is a real, well, not a real, I guess not a real team, but this is a much better team that they've played so far. And I think Utah is even better than that 12 ranking that they've been bestowed by the AP. I think they're much better than that. And I said it before the season too. I thought Utah was going to come into the Big 12 and absolutely control it, because they had been in control of the Pac-12 for several years before they jumped ship. And now coming into this conference, Oklahoma and Texas are gone.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State and probably Kansas State now is going to be their biggest competition in that conference. And this is going to be step one for Utah on conquering the Big 12. We'll go into Stillwater. They have a great mix on their offense between the pass and the rush. Cam Rising is a very capable quarterback.
If he plays, though, that's the big question, is can he stay healthy? I mean, he didn't play last week. The backup is not very good. I think he's got 4 touchdowns to 3 interceptions about a half of a game. So if Cam Rising can't stay healthy, this Utah team is, as much as potential as they have, they're not going to deliver on it, because he is the linchpin for that offense.
So assuming that Cam Rising gets himself good to go for this weekend, which hopefully he does.
Yeah, he is.
He is. Awesome. Utah is absolutely winning this game.
Yeah.
I think so, too. I will throw out the caveat that if Oklahoma State can finally get Ollie Gordon going and allow Alan Bowman to be a complimentary piece instead of the focal point of that offense, I think it'll be a lot... Oklahoma State will have a lot better chance, because Alan Bowman, in what they've asked him to do this year, has been very, very good. He's been very safe with the ball. He's got, I think, an 8-2 touchdown to interception ratio. He's been good enough. They just need Ollie Gordon to be the superstar that they thought he was. They need Ollie Gordon to play like Ashton Jaunty is, and not like
any other
like
terrible
running back.
I mean, he's not like,
yeah. There's a running back.
The stats aren't awful. They're not Ollie Gordon, and that's the problem.
No, he's playing like Donovan Edwards instead of Ollie Gordon.
Ollie Gordon, yeah.
Which just can't happen. Into another game I'm very excited for different reasons. Number 8, Miami, the U, at USF. Mm. At USF?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Or was that wrong?
I don't think so, but that's kind of crazy that I realized that. Yeah. No. Well, I mean, I went right off ESPN, but...
Yeah, it's in Tampa.
Wow, yeah. So, Miami on the road at USF. Interesting.
Undefeated Hurricanes.
That just makes me even more happy with
when a ranked team has to go. Yeah, when a ranked team has to go on the road,
yeah.
It's always like, oh, hey now. Like, but it's watch out. Like, that's why, like, last week, that's why I was like, oh, watch out for Kentucky. Like, this is a ranked team on the road. It doesn't always go well.
But it's not even just a rank. It's a Power 5 school at a non-Power 5 school. How often do you see that? It's essentially a bye game. I know it's an in-state... Right, but it's essentially a bye game.
Although USF, like those Florida schools, like they are, they're not power. I guess Power Four. Not Power Four, but they're still on like the upper echelon of like the next guys up. Like look at UCF; they just
they're Big 12 now.
Entered the Big 12.
USF probably gets the call within the next couple years.
They're definitely knocking on the door. But this one, Now, USF did give Bama a run, but I think that was because Bama was just asleep for, like, the first three quarters of the game. If Cam Ward can come out quickly for Miami and really just punch USF in the jaw, like, maybe even a couple times, they could get it in the end zone twice before USF scores. This game's over in the first quarter.
Absolutely.
I think yes, but USF now has experience against one of the top teams in the country. They have the taste of getting so close to that big upset. They're going to want it. They've looked very good in their other two games. They played a quarterback who is not like Cam Ward in their like true definition of the word, their play styles. But they're both quarterbacks who don't really care. They play very loose. They have fun when they play. They're gunslingers. They'll throw the ball all over the field. They're quarterbacks who take over a game. And so they have now that experience playing against the quarterback, you know, the Cam Ward, the Jalen Milroe, the top quarterback in the country type thing. They contain Jalen Milroe for the most part. Now, here's where we're going to see the coaching adjustments, right? Can they come out and perform like they need to for four quarters? Because they played three amazing quarters against Alabama. Now, if they can play four amazing quarters just like they played against Alabama, I think this is going to be a very good game. And I think Miami... They're on top of the world right now, but they can come crashing down real quick.
UMiami's offense is putting up 500 yards per game this year.
That's pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
That is really, really good. Like, that much consistency through three games is just... you don't find it a lot, to be perfectly honest. You don't find it a lot in a lot of teams. Like, they'll swing back and forth... They'll have, like, a better offensive weekend, and then the next weekend the defense will show up. But for this Miami team, through the first 3 weeks of the season, they're putting up a consistent amount of offense, a large amount of offense consistently, and their defense is playing really well on a week-to-week basis. There doesn't seem to be many holes in this team other than the fact that they're in the ACC, so take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I mean... We'll see. I like the USF team. I'm big on them, but it could also, you know, be a blowout. And so I watched that Bama game, and I just really liked the way USF looked against a team that, for all intents and purposes, is much better than them. And so, you know, if they can come out and play just like that, I think they have a decent shot, especially when the spread is 17 – or not the spread. The 17 points is what they're being given right now. And so I think –
At home is crazy.
At home, yeah. And I think Miami is really going to, they could really find themselves asleep at the wheel here, and big trap game. So,
but it's not that far of a drive from Miami to Tampa.
Miami fans won't even drive to their own stadium. They're not going to Tampa.
No, I mean, yeah.
We'll see, though. We'll see. And into our final game of the slate that we have any interest in, really. Number 6, Tennessee at... Number 15, OU, Saturday, 7:30 game. Let's get it started for that 7:30 slate, hopefully finally being good. OU's first SEC game.
Ever.
They get it in the week before Texas gets their first SEC game. Here we go. It is the new age of college football. We saw a couple teams get their first Big Ten wins, We're going to see a couple teams get their first Big 12 wins. We're going to see maybe the first SEC win of the new era for OU. I just don't see it happening. Tennessee is going to go on the road. Nico's going to do Nico things. Nico's going to be – this could be the Nico – this could be the game that Nico cements himself in that Heisman race. And he's not just a, hey, you Tennessee's been really good. It's a Nico's been really great. And this could be his real coming out party to the country.
And to that point, Oklahoma's defense has been softer versus the pass than the run this year. So I think, and especially when Tennessee having a player like Dylan Sampson on the back burner, playing in the same backfield as Nico Iamaleva, that is a lot to have to worry about as a defense. So like, if they crack down on the run, which they've been able to do so far pretty successfully, the Sooners' run defense has been solid. But Dylan Sampson's probably one of the best running backs in college football right now. He's a very hard man to stop. And when you commit the guys that you need to stop him, it's going to open up the top for Nico Iamaleva, and he might take the top off of Oklahoma's defense. I agree with you. I think Tennessee is going to wipe the floor with Oklahoma. Sooners getting their first taste of the SEC medicine, so to speak.
And, I mean, the Josh Heupel offense is perfect for Nico and for Sampson in that it's going to they spread it out. They're going to throw the ball. It's going to open up those lanes, and for Brent Venables being such a great defensive coach at Clemson, he's come to Oklahoma and his defense has looked average at best. They gave up 24 points a game last year. They haven't really played anyone. They're still giving up, I think, 11 points per game this year against subpar competition. They're now playing the best offense in the country.
The best defense.
And the best defense. They held NC State to 10 points. We'll see what that really means down the line. I'm more impressed by their offense than their defense, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, for
sure. And the Brent Venables offense, or defense, has not been what it should be considering Brent Venables' pedigree as a defensive coach. The Josh Heupel offense has been one of the best in the country when he has a quarterback, like we saw with that Hendon Hooker. I mean, even with Joe Milton at quarterback, it was still a pretty good offense. But it's now reverting. It's an even better offense than it was with Hendon Hooker at the wheel, in which many people thought that they were a top five team in the country. This year, I think it's very arguable that they can also be a top five, top four team in the country. OU, on the other hand, I don't know if Jackson Arnold is that good, right? If Tennessee can make Jackson Arnold have to win that game for OU, I think Tennessee's in a very good spot, even if they do play it close. And I have here written on my notes that it's either going to look like the OU's game against Houston, in which they won 16-12 and it was just a dogfight ugly, or Tennessee is going to come out and play like they did against NC State and it's going to be a complete blowout. So OU's either going to win this game close and ugly, or Tennessee is going to win it just and we'll turn it off after the first half.
Yeah.
I think that's about right. That sounds about right to me.
Which, I mean, I wouldn't complain either way because, one, you get a nice close game upset. And one you get
on the
to
other
watch
hand, Rocky the, Top.
On the other hand, you get to watch that Tennessee offense go to work. So that
get to hear that fight song like six or seven times during the broadcast.
Way.
It's great.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. couple games we didn't get to, but I do just want to shout out in each of the time slots here is Kansas at WVU. You know, maybe not the flashiest, but those are two teams that people had some hope for coming into the season. You know, Big 12 game. Could be real fun to watch. Could be high scoring.
They definitely both have chips on their shoulder.
Definitely.
After the losses.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, they're both just chomping at the bit.
It could be a very fun game. Who knows? Could be a decent second game to have on in the commercial break of that 12 o'clock slate. Rutgers at Virginia Tech is in a similar mold to that. If Rutgers wins this game, I think they have a serious conversation for being a very decent team. You know, 8-9 wins is not out of the question for this Rutgers team. Tucker's got a big old smile on his face over there. What do you got to say,
There's
Tucker?
Some good things happening down in Piscataway, New Jersey.
Rutgers.
The Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They're going to absolutely destroy the spread.
Yeah?
Rutgers.
But, you know, Virginia Tech is a good football team. This is a win for Virginia Tech here. It should not be slept on at all because Rutgers is also a very good football team. Very decent 3:30 slot game there. And then the nightcap... Sadly, BYU went to the Big 12 and not the Pac-2. Could have been Pac-2 after dark. We have a Big 12 game after dark. Kansas State at BYU. Number 13, Kansas State at BYU. Ranked team on the road.
It's another one of those games where
spread is only 6.5 for Kansas State.
It's another one of those ranked team on the road against an unranked team. Mm-hmm. And this one's even more of an upset watch because it's a conference game. I know, like, we were talking about how, like, oh, when a Power 4 team plays a non-Power 4 team on the road, it's interesting. No, conference games on the road are just as interesting, not more so.
Right.
And it's interesting. It's an interesting one, too, because a lot of people have Avery Johnson as a dark horse Heisman candidate in that he's been very good. He is a very good quarterback. He's got nice hair, very long hair.
Always with the hair.
Sorry, Pat McAfee was talking about his hair the other day, and it was just on my brain. He's a good quarterback, number 13 team in the country. 6.5-point favorite.
Kansas State's defense is very, very good.
They are.
And they make some plays. I think they're like the top scoring defense in the country in the last 2 years.
They're 13 in the AP, but I think in the public eye, I think they're a very underrated team in terms of the casual fan.
They
have the ability to put on some very, they have the ability to play some very entertaining games. They play some very entertaining games.
I thought they might slip up against Tulane, but they proved me wrong. Tulane covered the spread, but Kansas State won by like two scores.
Yeah,
so
I don't think it can even be called a slip up against Tulane because Tulane for the last couple years has been, if not the best, they've been one of the best group of five teams in the country. Mm-hmm. And they, I mean, every time they play a Power 4 team, they are right there in it and they make you work for it. So I don't think a close game against Tulane can be discounted against or be held against a team, no matter, you know, how much we thought they should have beaten them by. So those are a couple of games that we didn't maybe get as in-depth on, but Kansas at WVU, Rutgers at Virginia Tech, and Kansas State at BYU, a couple games sprinkled in there that you might turn on in commercial breaks or at halftime with some of those other better games.
Just throw it on the computer.
Throw it on the fourth monitor you got going on somewhere. You got the phone, you got the TV, you got the monitor
four?
And the laptop.
And the iPad.
Only
and the
four
iPad,
monitors?
Yeah.
You're doing something wrong.
Yeah, well, you know,
you can split screen
you gotta
now.
You got to conserve.
Oh, that's true.
Gotta
yeah,
conserve
four
space,
monitors
yeah.
with three screens on each monitor.
Got to conserve space in Walsh. Not a whole lot of space. Now, we've gotten through our game previews. We've gotten through our top five. We've gotten through our Heisman. We're going to get into everyone's favorite segment of the week. A little bit of Superdog action. I won't bark. I'm not pleasing to anyone's ears. Yeah, I'm so sorry if you have headphones on and just heard me barking. I should have thought about that. I apologize for that. We will get into the Superdogs. We'll start with, who wants to start? Anyone have?
Mine's probably the most ridiculous, I think. Or maybe not most ridiculous, but probably, I think, the least likely, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
My Superdog this week is going to be Georgia Tech, the Yellow Jackets, on the road against number 19 Louisville, and they are a 10.5-point underdog. It's a pretty big spread, especially going on the road against a ranked opponent. But I don't think Louisville should be ranked 19th. They haven't really played anybody. They're 3-0 right now, but they have wins against Jacksonville State and Austin Peay. Like,
a win is a win, I guess.
A win is definitely a win, but I don't know if those wins are worth putting this team at 19, especially in, like, coming out of the ACC. Like, I don't, like, any of the teams from the ACC, I don't think, really deserve the ranks that they have. Even Miami, but, like, they might be the only one who actually deserves their ranking. And I, like, Georgia Tech has been, like, solid so far. Their defense has been questionable, and that the defense pretty much gave away that Syracuse game. But Haynes King is a very, very, very legit player. And, like,
he just looks like he's going to get folded in half every time he gets hit. That guy's a stick.
That is true.
And he throws weird.
But I think you could watch out for a really, really sneaky Georgia Tech upset. So my Superdog this week, not just taking the spread, I'm going to take Georgia Tech to win against Louisville on the road.
We'll go to you now, Isabella.
My Superdog is Oklahoma, and that is also a really big take. I think Jackson Arnold actually, like, give him the time and the peace, and he might be able to pull it off.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. There's a huge, a big maybe. I don't have that much faith in this team, but I do have enough to pick them as my super dog because they've won against Tulane, Houston, and Temple. Like, it's not the Sooners that we know, that we used to know and love, but they could be in a rebuild year, and this could be one step through the door and, like, you know, running the SEC. We don't know yet. This
running the SEC
I don't
is
know.
Crazy.
It is crazy, but, I mean, 7 point...
7.5? Is that what it is?
7 right now.
Okay.
And...
Well, that's going to keep dropping, I
An
think.
Over,
you mentioned,
over-under's
we mentioned
only
50 the show.
Yeah, it was 8.
I think it was like 8
before.
Or 8.5 a couple
you know
days
what?
Ago, They're... so it just keeps getting closer.
Yeah, you know what? Guys, just think about it.
No, I don't think about it. I'm sorry. This Tennessee team is too good. I don't...
Rocky,
I know it's
Rocky
Super
Top
Dogs.
Will
I know
always
it's Super
be
Dogs
home sweet home to
out,
me.
But.
I figured. With a big T for Tucker.
The big orange T for Orange Tucker over
Gotta
here.
Love Rocky Top.
You know, Tucker, you said yours was a little outlandish. I think we touched on mine a little bit. Mine's probably very outlandish as it's a 17-point. They're being given 17 points here, but it's USF against Miami at home, right? It's a team that looked very good against Alabama for 3 quarters before Jalen Milroe finally started playing like Jalen Milroe. But it's just they've beat the brakes off of everyone else they've played. The only game they lost was a very close game against Bama that the score doesn't really reflect how the game was played. And so I think 17 is just outright disrespectful at home. That's absurd. And it's,
they should be mad about that.
That should be
fuel.
This is a very well-coached team. This is a very talented Group of Five team. And, you know, it's a in-state Florida rivalry, right? Those none of the teams in Florida like each other, especially the Group of Five guys. Especially a school like USF, who probably feels like they deserve to, you know, be picked up in this last round of expansion.
There's, like, big brother, little brother between, like,
yeah.
Florida State, FSU, and Miami. And
yeah.
then there's, like,
there's big brother
like big
and, like,
cousin,
tiny
cousin.
Little cousin. Yeah.
We can make a family tree
it's,
out of
it's
this.
Like
we
the
really could.
It's like the 27-year-old and, like, the 3-year-old cousin.
Yeah,
it's like,
but
yeah.
they're both at the kids' table.
It's like,
because
yeah.
none of the teams from Florida
Why
can actually play
here?
This year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Except Miami.
But I think 17 points is absolutely disrespectful. Kind of like you, I'm going to take USF outright. I think they win this game. I think it's probably going to be like a 24-17, 24-21, you know, walk-off field goal, walk-off touchdown type thing. But I think it's going to be one of the more exciting games of the weekend. I think it's going to be one of the bigger upsets of the year. And I know a lot of people, at least in the Twitterverse, are behind USF in this game. I may have had my thoughts swayed slightly by that, but I'm on USF. The other one, and I don't know the spread, so I don't know if it qualifies as a super dog, but one more bonus pick is Cal at Florida State. I think it's 2.5 is what it was last time I looked, so definitely not a super dog. An interesting game, though, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's still 2.5.
Cal Twitter is one of the most interesting things I think I've ever seen this last week. I don't know how much y'all are on Twitter, or at least college football Twitter, but, I mean... Cal is like big Cal Nation, like USSR type.
Oh.
The AI images of Cal with the
Wait,
communist
yes.
Cal.
I've seen it.
Seen
it's
those.
So funny.
And their supreme leader, Oslo
oh
the
my
Bear.
God. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my, it's hilarious. It's like
it's been one of the best Twitter weeks in college football in recent memory.
Yeah,
it's been
I
awesome.
Have seen those. Those are really funny.
Plus, Florida State, it just blows. So
that's true.
0-3 start
dude,
would
they're
not shock
like,
me.
Oh, this is so easy. Not necessarily that it's easy for California, but it's like they've had a good start to the season. I mean, they slapped UC Davis.
Beat Auburn.
Beating Auburn is huge.
And you know that you know it's a down year for Florida State, and you know it's a decent Cal team when they're going on the road to Florida State, and it's only 2.5 point. They're only 2.5 point dogs.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, especially at Florida State. Like,
yeah, rough.
FSU getting 2.5 points at the Doke is actually depressing.
It's rough. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't think you can justify Florida State being talked about ever again on this podcast unless they go 0-12. So that will probably be the last you hear about Florida State on College Gridiron. That will also be the last of what you hear from us this week. With me are Isabella Terracini and Tucker Austin. Grace McCarron has been in the booth. I am Barrett Spreitzer, and College Gridiron is an exclusive production of WFUV Sports.